Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 12th Canto, Chapter 13, Text Number 12. Adi Maja Vasamesu Vairagya Jnana Sanyutam Hari Lila Kata Kata Mrita Vandita Satsuram Sarva Vedanta Saranya Brahmat Marika Vadasanam Vastu Avityam Tanmistam Kaivalya Kaprayojanam. Translation: from the beginning to end, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of narrations that encourage renunciation of material life, as well as nectarian accounts of Lord Hari's transcendental pastimes, which give ecstasy to the saintly devotees and demigods. This Bhagavatam is the essence of all Vedanta philosophy, because its subject matter is the absolute truth, which, while non-different from the spirit soul, is the ultimate reality, one without a second. The goal of this literature is exclusive devotional service unto that supreme truth.
Purport.
Vairagya means giving up everything that has no relation with the absolute truth. Saintly devotees and demigods are enthused by the nectar of the Lord's spiritual pastimes, which are the essence of all Vedic knowledge. Vedic knowledge elaborately negates the ultimate reality of material things by emphasizing their temporary, fleeting existence. The ultimate goal is vastu, the factual substance, which is advityam, or one without a second. That unique absolute truth is a transcendental person far beyond the mundane categories and characteristics of personality found in our pale material world. Thus, the ultimate goal of Srimad Bhagavatam is to train a sincere reader in love of Godhead. Lord Krishna is supremely lovable because of his eternal transcendental qualities. The beauty of this world is a dim reflection of the unlimited beauty of the Lord. Without compromise, Srimad Bhagavatam persistently declares the glories of the absolute truth and is therefore the supreme spiritual literature, awarding a full taste of the nectar of love of Krishna and full consciousness. So basically in the verse it says that Srimad Bhagavatam is full of descriptions about renunciation from material life and about the pastimes of Hari. And then, in conclusion, the verse makes the point that actually Krishna consciousness is natural. So therefore, renunciation from material life, although difficult at first, is only difficult because we became temporarily conditioned by the material energy. But we will not lose anything, because when we come to the platform of pure devotional service and we've given up all material life, we will only find that this is actually the true nature of the soul. Of course, it is a fact that it all comes out in the wash. This process of devotional service in the first stage is a process of purification. It is a process where we must change. And such changes are not happening very quickly, because we have come accustomed to our ways. We have behaved for such a long time in a particular way. And then suddenly, here is this Krishna consciousness. And it's very involved. In the beginning, we have to start accepting regulative principles and change so many of our habits. But that's only the gross adjustment. And in a way, although it may be difficult, it's clear, it's clear whether one is taking intoxicants or not. It's clear, yes or no. But then comes the more subtle platform of behavior in devotional life. We have to gradually
embrace the behavior of a devotee. And that's not so easy, because sometimes qualities are asked for that seem to come in conflict with our nature. Sometimes our nature seems to be just different, and it feels like, how can we embrace this sadhachar, this Vaishnava behavior, when it's against our nature? Well, we must have great courage, that whatever our nature is, that the nature that we are seeing now is the temporary nature that we have picked up by lifetimes and many lifetimes of association with the material energy. And underneath that temporary nature, something of our eternal nature comes through. So this is it's a mix that we are experiencing now. So we cannot just say, oh, this is my nature. No. Don't worry about the nature. It's not so easy to say, because we do worry about our nature, about who we are. But we must have courage. We must have courage to just take shelter of Srimad Bhagavatam and behave like a Vaishnava. And with that courage, to follow the path of Dharma, and then have faith that in the end all our desires will be satisfied completely, and that our true spiritual nature will awaken and come out. So many difficult adjustments to make. Humility, tolerance, to allow oneself to become like dough, you know, like dough of a chapati. It is soft and can be pushed into different shapes. So to let the Vaishnavas take over our life, and to let the Vaishnavas tell us, do this, jump here, jump there. The first time I came and stayed in the temple, a devotee told me, you must dance. I said, like, I don't feel like dancing. How do I dance? I'll dance when I feel like dancing. So no, you must dance. Like, you know, that doesn't sound very nice. Something like, two guns. Of course, but no. And my rebellious nature, which is very strong, was immediately saying, oh, I will not be forced. No way. But we have to become soft. Soft. And that is what it means. Sneha. In the advanced stages of devotional service, the heart begins to melt. Sneha. One becomes ready to adjust to the will of Krishna, the will of the Vaishnavas. Oh yes. Anything. So Srimad Bhagavatam is aiming at that. So therefore, pure devotional service and purification that we're going through is going through two stages. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is the story of the Gundicha Marjana. Gundicha Marjana, the cleansing of the Gundicha temple. And in that story, we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, along with all his associates, went to cleanse the Gundicha temple, which is the temple where Lord Jagannath stays after the Rati Yatra has gone down the main road in Puri. It comes to the Gundicha temple, and for 1 week Lord Jagannath stays in that temple and then goes back. So the original Rati Yatra is two Rati Yatras, one at the beginning of the week and one at the end of the week, the Uttarat. also do that in context of here. We have two antilateras, a little bit the one going back. They go the same route, but we go the other direction.
So, anyway, the Gudicha temple was being cleansed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees. And it is described how Mahaprabhu engaged everyone in sweeping up dust. At first, they swept out all the gross dust, and it was a lot of work. And then, they start sweeping a second time, and taking out the fine dust. So, sweeping out the gross dust means to give up sinful activities, to give up the gross material activities, the activities of adharma. But then sweeping out the second dust, that is very difficult. That is our, then our pride has to go. Then our, then we have to bow down to the will of a superior. Bowing down is not gymnastics. Obviously, why are we all the time falling flat on the ground? Like people in the world, they cannot. They look at it like when everyone falls on the ground, they look at it like, "Oh, what's going on here? This is strange." In the Juno Arts told us, no obeisances at the beachfront this year. Just because people are looking at this, what's going on here? I'm going all the way on the ground. Sometimes they say, "Have you lost your contact lenses?" Something like this. Yes. Everywhere looking. No, we are bowing down, not as a physical exercise, but to bow down our will. Bowing down means to bow down, to give up our independence, to bow down our will before a superior Vaishnava, and to let that Vaishnava decide what is important, what is not important, what is good, what is bad. And it takes a whole adjustment. It is not so easy, not easy to serve the pure devotee. Srila Prabhupada now is sometimes remembered as the loving, smiling, sweet, inspiring, transcendental personality. But that was not entirely all that was going on. Prabhupada was also strong and chastising. Prabhupada would sometimes speak in cutting ways. And actually, that is reserved. That is reserved for those who are Upanishad. Upanishad, which is obviously relating to the scriptures, Upanishads. The Upanishads are scriptures particularly for people who are getting serious about spiritual life. And Upanishad means to sit close by, the feet of the spiritual master. So if you sit close by, you get mercy, but it's also dangerous because you also may get a slap or a chastisement or something like that. So it's much safer to be at a distance and sort of, I smile and he smiles and everything is safe. So to sit close by is more difficult. And when we sit close by, that is when the purification is getting more intense. And
Prabhupada was. He was strict with his leaders in Mayapur. He was so strict, so strict. Why? Why is this plant yellow? Why didn't it get water? You are responsible for this project. I mean, and the managers go, we are responsible for that the plants are getting water. Yes, that is how far it goes if responsibility is not properly. So the Vaishnav understanding goes so far beyond what we think is normal, reasonable, what the mind kind of thinks, well, you know, this is a reasonable standard of surrender. No, no, really. I'm surrendering more than other people. So it's very reasonable. I'm doing good, actually. No. No, no, no. Not good enough. It must be better. It must be 100%. No less. Krishna wants 100%. Sometimes it is said, Krishna is not looking at what we offer to him. Krishna is looking at what we're holding back. And whatever we're holding back, Krishna is making arrangements for a purification. So somehow or other, we must learn. We must learn to accept also chastisement as a form of mercy. And not just and just accept it in a positive state of mind. So the point is that, yes, vairagya, renunciation of material life, renunciation of part of ourself, that is the tough part. It's one thing to give up some sense gratification. That's one thing. But more difficult than that is to change our character. That is the most difficult. Then it gets close to home. Like they say in book distribution that you should, well, Vaisheshika Prabhu, who is expert, he says there is no limit to how much you can flatter a person. He says, like, I used to think you can flatter people too much. So now I know you can't flatter them enough. And the more you flatter, everyone will drink it up. Oh. So, especially when it gets personal. Like, for example, when you see someone and you say, oh, that's a really nice sweater you have. Puts the face. Yes. That's right. Oh, you have a good taste. Yes. So, they like that. Oh, yes. You're very good. But then he explained, he says, if you say something about the clothes, it's good. But when you say something about the person himself, right, that's even more powerful. Because that's even more dear to the person. So we speak about, if the character is, our personal character is most dear to us. And it's that personal character that we also have to renounce to an extent. And allow ourselves to be purified in the association with the Vaishnavas. The scriptures say it again and again. Sadhu, 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 shastra, sadhu, 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 siddhi, all the association of the devotees, the association of the devotees is most important. But and even the association of a pure devotee for a moment can bring about all perfection. But then we thought, then some of us are feeling sometimes disappointed. We feel like, I had hoped for more inspiration, if I'm really honest. I thought it would have been different. Of course, it's very nice. I would have thought it would be different. I thought that it would be always inspiring. before I joined Krishna Consciousness, I read the books and then I became convinced and then I decided to move into the temple. And in a few days before I joined the temple, I was thinking, it will be wonderful because now I will be with like-minded people, finally. After all this time, I will be with like-minded people and we'll have a wonderful mutual understanding and, like, you know, amazing exchanges, and it will be so enlightening. And then I joined, and then I saw that that person who I never liked, that he had also joined. And I kept like, what's he doing here? I can't be. How can he be here? That's not possible. But he was also devoted. And then I had to somehow or other live with these, with that devotee. So it was not always the association of the Vaishnavas, not just about inspiration. Sometimes it was about about developing tolerance and humility and all these things. Yes, it is like that. It is like that. Even in the relationship with the spiritual master, it is like that. The spiritual master is a spiritual giant. We are spiritual dwarfs. The spiritual master has so much credit with Krishna. He sees on a level which is so much more broad-minded than ours. After the living being becomes conditioned in the material world, he becomes small-minded. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said Kshudra. K-S. Kshudra. Means small-minded. And it is the opposite of being of Udharadi, of broader intelligence. One has to really see from the bigger perspective, from the eternal perspective, from the perspective of Krishna, from what is pleasing to Krishna, from the perspective of just being the instrument, becoming the instrument. And it's very hard to be the instrument. Because if we want to go in a certain direction and someone says, no, not in that direction, then we feel paralyzed. Then we feel like not going at all. But no. We must, then we feel, okay, then I don't do anything. You tell me not to move this way, then I will, okay, then I will not move at all. No. You must move, but must move in a way that is like being the instrument according to the desire of the superior person. Like, in my life, I used to play guitar, and I know my whole generation played guitar, right? That's a fact. I mean, it is. When I was a kid, I picked up a guitar and sang out loud, "Freedom!" Which was the sound of the generation, undoubtedly. But I really got into playing guitar. And I used to play 8 hours a day. And it used to be next to my bed, and in the morning I would just get up, sit on the edge of the bed and start playing guitar. That was the first thing I used to do. So it was very, let's say, very much intensely part of my life. And but then I came to Krishna consciousness, and I liked the Hare Krishnas very much, but I found out they were against guitars. And that was something like, I wasn't sure if I liked people that were against guitars. So it created a bit of a dilemma in me. But okay. Then I joined in Vrindavan, where we were like more traditional. So in Vrindavan, it's definitely no guitars. So that was like. So then I was For 20 years, man, I played guitar in my mind. In boring Bhagavatam classes, excuse me, it was me who thought they were boring, but in Bhagavatam classes that I experienced as boring, because Bhagavatam can never be boring, but I experienced it as boring, then in my mind I was playing, I was stringing guitar chords. What to do? It was hard. And then I refused to play harmonium, keyboard, touch the things, only strings. But then eventually, okay, I surrendered to harmonium and everything. It took a long time. And then one day, I was in the studio and I made a CD, all harmonium, and there was this guitar, it was a good one. And I picked it up, and I could still play after all these years. And then I just played one little track on the CD, and I tried to make it very oriental. And I thought, now it's okay. This will pass. This is okay. It's almost like Sita. It sounds almost like a Sita. That's good enough. And then my spiritual master said, I felt it, but I shouldn't give that CD to him, so I didn't. But someone else did. And then he sort of made a face. And I can see, oh God, no guitar for me. For others maybe, but not for me. Because he had another role in mind. Somewhere in the late 90s, the GBC body had a GBC meeting in Mayapur, and I was a sannyasi at the time, and I was traveling around Europe, and I had to speak many European languages, including French. Therefore, the GBC body had a vote, and they unanimously voted that I should become the GBC for France. So they asked me and said, well, you know, I'll discuss it with my spiritual master, who said that GBC for France, forget it. Why would you do such a thing with your life? I don't think it's a good idea. Okay, that was it. Then, almost in the same breath, he says, there's something else I want to talk to you about. And that is, I have discussed it with various of our leaders, and I think you should initiate disciples. And I go like, you know, that's really funny. The GBC says, I should be GBC of France, and you say forget it. And you say, I should initiate disciples in your presence, and the GBC will say, forget it. So that was a funny situation. Anyway, destiny took its course. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is just to illustrate with my own life how we are not necessarily going to be what we think we want to be for Krishna. And that, you know, the spiritual master may have another idea. Just the opposite of what we think we're going to be doing. He wants us to do something else. Then we do that. And we try to just adjust to it and somehow learn how to do it. But it's not my nature. I was in charge of construction, stone, cement, and bricks. I'm a people's person. I'm good at that. Relationships, you know, social interaction, that I can do. Bricks, stone, cement, concrete. I was in charge of the mind, of the body. And I looked at that big building. Have you seen it? There's a shell, and there's like the veranda in an arch shape, and it looks like a mouth. It looks like a big head, you know, with a mouth. And the mouth said, "Feed me, feed me." And I was bringing steel, cement, money, endless quantities, and it was just always, for years, feeding that huge samadhi. And I did really, and I felt it's not my nature. But who cares? It was the desire of my spiritual master. Then my spiritual master left, because at that time, because I joined in 78, that was the time that one was initiated by one of the 11 gurus. So one of the 11 was my guru. He left. Then I had a moment of doubt. Shall I continue now with this samadhi, or shall I stop? It's not my desire, it was his desire, but now he's left. Now I'm free. Now I can give it up. And I thought about it. But then I thought, yes, but who will take over? And Krishna brought me here. And I had to see that also. So I just continued. Because we are an instrument of Guru and Krishna, and we have to try to become that. It's not easy. It's not easy. But in that, and in that, so much renunciation is required. So many changes we go through. But it is only in that way that we can hope to change. Not just, it's my life and I do what I want, and you know, it's my psychophysical nature is that I'm inclined to this particular type of engagement. And you know, my authorities don't understand me. You know, no. That's not first class, that's second class. That is karma yoga. That's not pure bhakti. That is that we engage according to our nature. We just dovetail our nature in the service of Krishna. But pure bhakti means whatever Krishna desires, yes, yes. The gopis, yes, whatever Krishna wants, whatever he desires. Well, asishiva abadavatam pinastamam varsamamatam kurutuva. Whether he fulfills our desires, gives us great happiness, or makes us broken hearted, he is unbeloved, unconditionally, whatever he desires. So it is quite amazing, this Srimad Bhagavatam. It is quite amazing. Because this Srimad Bhagavatam is really about that. It's a book about that. I mean, you keep on reading, and each time you read it again, you discover more. Oh, I need to also purify this. Oh, I still fall short here. Oh, I have to grow more. This is the nature of Srimad Bhagavatam. We just keep on encountering more and more instruction that we never saw before about how to become a pure devotee. And the more we follow, the more it becomes fine-tuned until we are finally perfect servants, perfectly ready to assist the eternal servants of the Supreme Lord until we become ready to become residents of the spiritual world. That is what Bhagavatam is offering us. And then it offers us some sanctity. Okay, so now we've come to the point of questions. He was wondering, how do you have strong faith, strong determination to execute the order of the spiritual master? You know, once I was in Australia, and at that time my health wasn't good, so they sent me to a farm. And then I was on the farm just helping out to get some health together. And then one day I saw that they had beautiful marble deities somewhere in a cupboard. And it's just like, wow, such amazing deities. And when are they going to be installed? Is it all, we're not going to install them because we don't have a temple for them? So then there was a big discussion, and then I felt that I came up with an idea. There was a brahmachari house, and I made a plan that we could turn this brahmachari house into an interim temple, and later in the future build a big temple. And in that way install the deities and move the brahmacharis and plan it all out. And I did my homework. I went to a meeting to present the idea. And I learned, do your homework. So I did my homework and I spoke to a builder. In that house, there was a wall that divided the house in sections, and it was a load-bearing wall, and the roof was resting on that wall. So, I went to a builder and I checked it out, and I checked out how to take out that wall and what you needed to do and so on. So then I went to the meeting, came to the meeting, and I said, well, I have a proposal that we make this house into a temple. I said, it's impossible. Cannot be done. Cannot be done. Because it's too small. I said, we'll break the walls. So no, that cannot be done. It's a load-bearing wall. I said, yes, I know. And I therefore consulted a professional builder. And he gave the way how to do it, and the costing and everything. And here is all the information. And then, so finally, all the big managers were there and they had a photo time and said, okay, it will pass. Then after that, I went 1 minute to the bathroom for a few minutes, and I told my men who were waiting, go down to the house and break that ball right now. They passed the resolution. So, while the meeting was still going on, they broke the wall and fixed it. And then later, after the meeting, they came and said, what? You broke the wall? I said, well, you passed the resolution. So, we had permission. And that way, I did. That was fun. But anyway, how do you do that? So, what the builder told us, he said, there is a beam in top of the roof. And now, because you take up the load-bearing wall, which is supporting that beam, you're going to take it out. Okay, you will have to make a second beam, which is lower, and you anchor that in the wall, and you connect the two beams, right? The upper one, okay, it's a little technical, and the lower one, and you connect them with many little strips of wood. And those become soldiers. I said, okay, we'll do that. Should we screw those little pieces of wood so that they don't come out? I said, no, 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 just a few nails will do. I said, nails? But what if there's movement? I said, no, no problem. Nails is fine. It's fine. Okay, so back to the two beams and all the strips of wood. And he said, these strips of wood, we call them in technical terms, we call them soldiers. He said, many little soldiers. And all these little strips, in them, each one of them is weak. But together, all of them carry the whole roof. They carry the whole roof. Just these little strips. Right? So, I found that very interesting. That the weight of the whole big roof was just hanging on a few hundred little strips of wood, that were like that thin. And the whole weight of that whole roof was on those little strips. That was amazing. So, in the same way, our surrender to the instruction of our spiritual master is resting on the surrender in all the small things. The big surrender will be the result of surrender in small things. So let us surrender in many small things, and then we'll be able to surrender to something big. But if without surrendering to the small things, we try to surrender to something big, it will not work. It will not work. Then it cannot carry the weight of that surrender. But it's like by all the little, all these moments, you know, just surrendering in this situation, that situation, so many situations, all the small moments, that surrender, that we build up the strength for some big surrender.
Talking about spiritual life, how easy sometimes it is to think that we can't correct
mantra.
I was just thinking, I don't know if it was a program that said spiritual life is difficult, but material life is impossible.
Yeah, I don't know who said that. I've heard it around from time to time, and that I don't think we can trace it back to Srila Prabhupada. But it is a nice statement. It is a nice statement. I appreciate it. Spiritual life may be difficult, you know, like, may be difficult, but a material life is impossible. That's it. Yeah.
And then the question, we're talking about our characters. But surely there are some parts of our characters that will be with us eternally?
Yes. Surely some parts of our character will be with us eternally, and I can't just change these fundamental aspects of our character. Well, I mentioned it in the beginning that, yes, that after all, our existence rests on the presence of the soul. The mind is getting its energy from the soul, although the soul is mostly in a dormant state. Some of a person's character is coming through, even in our conditioned state. Yes, so some aspects of our character will remain. That is true. But, you know, when our spiritual master desires that we act in a way which is different than our nature. You know, like, let's say by nature we are a very timid person, and we just are afraid to speak in front of other people. But if the spiritual master desires, then a timid person will speak, just as the verse Mukam Karoti Vatam Pangam Langayate Kripatamahanande Shikaruti Natarinam. That the dumb will recite eloquent poetry, the lame will climb mountains, the blind will see the luminaries in the sky. So, in other words, it's not about suppressing our nature, it's about engaging our nature. But sometimes the spiritual master may require a service from us that will require a type of behavior that's not exactly our nature. But we may have to do. You know, I've also had to do like some things that were not my nature. Like I had to be, for a while, I had to be a bookkeeper in the temple. And I'm just not a bookkeeper, you know, because I'm the kind of person, when I do all the books and so on, right, if at the end I am 10 rand out, let's say it's 10 rand short, I'll put in the 10 rand for my pocket. Rather than go through the whole calculation again, too much, I'd rather, even 100 rand, I'd rather pay the 100 rand than sit for 2 hours trying to find the mistake. And that's kind of that kind of bookkeeper I am. So I may not be a bookkeeper by nature, but I'll do my best. If that's what's asked for me, I'll try. I'll try and do it as good as I can. Although here and there, I will put, you know, a few extras, and sometimes there's too much money, you know. So then I didn't take it for myself. I just kept it in a box, separate for the next time when it would be short. In this way, I did good as a bookkeeper, but it's not my nature. Yeah. Yes.
Loud.
Loud.
At least. sometimes, I think mostly because we don't get so many direct instructions from the spiritual master, maybe once in 2 years.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen that often to get a direct instruction. So, with that not happening, I'm just wondering what scope is there for us acting out of our own inspiration? Something that inspires you.
Okay. So, we may not get so much instruction of the spiritual master not so often, maybe once in 2 years. What scope is there to act according to our own inspiration in service of Krishna? That's a good, interesting topic. Yes, there is scope for that. I mean, it's not that we are looking for a movement of people who are completely dependent and who in the morning wait for an email before they pick up their toothbrush. And when the mail says, yes, you are allowed now to pick up your toothbrush. Otherwise, no, he didn't say it. So, we must offer all independence to the spiritual master, and the spiritual master will offer it back to us to whatever degree he likes. But he can also take it back any moment. We remain his property. So, you know, we may develop according to our own inspiration within the boundaries of Krishna consciousness a nice project. Let's say, okay, I know you like farms, so let's say farm. Let's say it's a farm. And we do that, and we work on it for 7 years, right? It's blood, sweat, and tears, and we have cabbages that are twice the size of the cabbages in the whole district, and we have prize photos in the paper, and so on. Everyone's so happy, and we are just like, it's the fulfillment of our life. We're doing what we always wanted to do for Krishna, and it finally worked. Jai! And then one day, after 7 years, never saying a word to us, never showing any interest, never a sign of affection or anything, the spiritual master walks in, eyes cold, and mercifully says, I want you to go to preach in Japan. And your false teeth fall out of your mouth. And you just stand there going, oh, it can't be true. I just don't have it. If I, when I, Me and plants, you know, when I touch a plant, spontaneously it starts to hit its head. And I just don't have it. Definitely not like green fingers, you know what I'm saying? So if you made me a farmer, naturally, I kind of, my mind doesn't like it so much. Because I'm not so good at it. So it's natural that somebody, whatever he's good at, that he likes to do. If you're not always, sometimes you have people that cook 108 horrible preparations and want to go in the kitchen every time. But mostly, we like the things we're good at. And generally speaking, it's nice to engage people according to their propensity so that they produce nice things for Krishna. And spiritual masters are looking at that and propensities. But sometimes the need of the situation requires that a person sacrifices his propensity for the higher good. And so it's the prerogative of the spiritual master. Yeah, he can listen. What we should do at the end of the day, come for 7 years to destroy a farm. We are not allowed to get a heart attack on that day. Anyone else? Okay. Thanks a lot, Srila Prabhupada.